Zech Nishmas Havi Mori, Yaakov Yisrael Pilchas, Zech Nishmas Daniel Shainavas, Yeshua Falak. Okay, we're up to Packet Chav Gimel. Continuation of in Kolash Shenota Lomas. And the first piece is from this Sefer Halacha Refua, which is different articles from different people. And this is from Moshe Hirschler. Moshe Hirschler was a very big Talmid Chacham in New York and in Chicago. He wrote many footnotes on many Rishonim. Moshe Hirschler. So,
he was Rosh Yeshiva here by us.
Yes, he was.
Rabbi Schefter took over his year.
Yes. And he has the discussion of when we're talking about the Hasaras Hamoneya, and basically the things he discusses here are things that we've talked in the past. So you know, going through the same Ramah and the discussion. And he basically, we're on Packet Chav Gimel today. Packet Chav Gimel. And on page 4, he says, L'chora, this is Rav Moshe Hirschler, Nira, Nilmad mi Psaka Shulchanoch, Sharasar Samonei, Embo Averas Ritzicha. In other words, and we said this before, that gosis is kechai. So if you take away the chopping of the wood or the salt, so you're causing his death. So why isn't that ritzicha? So he likes the svara that ein zegrom shor ritzicha ela mishum dahavi inyan skuli. In other words, it's Indian schooly. I mean, the way fellas here discussed it is, it's not something that gives nourishment to his body. I think maybe Steve said, others, Dr. Fine, that it's more in the neurological, you know, it causes a shock or something like that to keep you going. So in other words, so his idea is anytime a person is going to be monea ochel from a person, so then that's going to be a question of ritzicha, gram ritzicha. But if you stop the Ramah never spoke about not giving ochel to a goses. That we don't say that you could stop giving ochel to a goses. He's saying that you could stop the shock treatment, so to speak, which is keeping him alive, even though Lachora, that's again all goes back to the original discussion that we had about the machlokas between the Beis Yaakov and the Shrus Yaakov. Is the are we mechal Shabbos for a gosis, and or not? Or are we allowed to stop the gesisa from happening? Or do we say that once he's in that stage of gesisa? So then the Beis Yaakov says there's no more Chayisha anymore. Just let it happen. And the Shvus Yaakov says no. There's still Chayisha in the state of Gesisa. But Rav Lau said that's only if the... Rav Lau said that's only if the... the thing you're giving him is something that is nourishing him, is strengthening his body. But if it's not something that's strengthening his body, it's just something that's just keeping, prolonging the life, then maybe not. Maybe even the Shvus Yaakov would agree. Okay. I wanted to show you today one of the articles of Rav Bleich Shlita. Usually I don't, you know, the English articles, I always say that Rabbi Bleich's English articles, so a lot of English articles are usually on a lower level, and they're not, so usually I don't put them in packets. But Rabbi Bleich's English is like ever, is least if not more than anyone's Hebrew's articles. So if you take a look here, in packet 23, on page 18, where he speaks about euthanasia, and he says over here on page 18, where I put the arrow here. On the right side, he says, life with suffering is regarded as being, in many cases, preferable to cessation of life, and with it, elimination of suffering. And he says the Gemara Sota indicates that the Sota who was made to drink the bitter waters did not always die immediately. If she possesses other merits, the Gemara says that the water doesn't kill her right away. So she's going to have a debilitating and degenerative state, which leads to protracted termination of life. The added longevity, although accompanied by pain and suffering, is viewed as a privilege. Okay, so life accompanied by pain is thus viewed as preferable to death. Right? So the question of taking away somebody's life, and therefore, and we're going to have a separate packet about this, about a person's bias on his own life. In other words, are we really bialim or not? So he says like this, that let's take a look. On page 21. So he says, although euthanasia, on the left side, although euthanasia in any form is forbidden, and listening of death even by matters of moment is regarded as tantamount to murder. Right? Hastening death is tantamount to murder. There's one situation in which treatment may be withheld from the morbid patient in order to provide for an unimpeded death, while the death of a goses may not be hastened. So this is, I keep telling you, this is Rav Bleich's, shita, that the key of the Ramah, see, people always think, oh, Hasaras HaMoneh is okay, Hasaras HaMoneh says, but the key that Rabbi Bleich always points out, that the Ramah is only by a goses. That's what he's talking about. But sometimes, when people say over this Ramah, they miss that point. And that's the most fundamental point. That in other words, people a lot of times are already removing treatment way before the gesisa starts. He says, "Well, the death of a goses may not be hastened." You see where I have it here on the left side of page 21. The last word on the line is goses. "Well, the death of a goses may not be hastened. There's no obligation to perform any action which will lengthen the life of the patient in this state. The distinction between an active and passive act applies only to a goses and to a goses only," right? That was the point, that the idea that you could be hasaras hamoneya is by a goses. In other words, by something else. If he's not a goses, so you can't say, well, I won't give him food or I won't do this to him. I'm not doing an action to. No, he says whether you're doing an action or not doing an action, when he's not a goses, if you do an action, that could be ritzicha. If you don't do an action, that could be losam al dal mreyecha. But either way, it's problematic. The idea of the Ramah, that's the main point that he always likes to, you know, point out, is the is that when a patient is that was actually in the clutches of the angel of death and the death process has actually begun, there is no obligation to heal, right? And that's the yesod of the Ramah. Therefore, the Ramah permits the removal of anything which constitutes a hindrance to the departure of the soul, such as clattering noise or salt upon his tongue, since such acts involve no active hastening of death, but only the removal of the impediment. In other words, he's dying. The body is shutting down. So then let him die. But some say, but you can't. But that's only over there. Some authorities not only sanction withholding of treatment, but prohibit any action prolong the agony of a goses. Right? In other words, that the prolong agony of a goses is that's the Tshuvas Beis Yaakov. That's the Tshuvas Beis Yaakov. That they, in other words, that's footnote 11. That you can't prolong. Others authorities, it says Eliezer of Waldenburg, insist that the life of a goses may not be shortened even passively by withdrawal of medication. In other words, so the Tzitz Eliezer says, no, you have to give medication to a goses, but because, and therefore, in other words, because he says that the difference is whether, that the case of the Ramah is just, you know, as people's pointed out, neurological things that are just keeping him alive. But to give medication is permissible, whereas the others might say not even. In other words, that's the question. In other words, it's clear that the Ramah is only clinical on goses, and then the question is there two chidushim? In one chidush in the Ramah that goses you can let die, even though a goses is if you kill a goses, you chayv misa. So he's an alive person, but he's in the throngs of death. So then, you know, don't stay in the way of that. And let him, or do we say no, that you could, the only thing that you could remove is the shock treatments and things like that, but the other things like giving him medicine or food or something like that you should still, they apparently are of the opinion that withholding medical therapy is not analogous to removal of an impediment, such as clattering noise or salt upon the tongue, which hinders the soul's departure. The latter are apparently considered to be in the category of skulos, non-natural and not approximately casual in nature, whereas drugs and medications are in the realm of rational, causing casually effective procedures. Alternative distinction may be drawn between the state of ghosts during which time the patient must be treated and the actual moment of the departure of the soul of the body, at which time man should not intervene. That was what we saw yesterday in the, that even though the Tzitz Eliezer was a big person, a believer of the, he didn't follow the Beis Yaakov. He followed the Shavus Yaakov. But even he would agree that at the very end, there's nothing more to do. And then he writes here that it cannot be overemphasized that even the earliest cited permissive authorities sanction acts of omission only when the patient is in a state of gesisa. Right? That's his main thing. I've been saying it, but now I'm showing it to you inside. That's only when the state of gesisa. But you can't say the guy is terminally ill, so therefore we're not going to, and he still has 5 months. And therefore we're going to stop giving him things, we're going to stop giving him. And Rabbi Bleichen, in another article, said, you know, a lot of times people speak about heroic measures. You know, that so Rabbi Bleichen's opinion is that this distinction between heroic measures and non-heroic measures is part of the Catholic doctrine. He doesn't think that, in his mind, that that's not a part of the Jewish doctrine. And this idea of, you know, heroic measures versus non-heroic measures. So, therefore, if you need to, like Rabbi Black said, you need to give him a feeding tube, to like my father was on a feeding tube for a long time before he was nifter, and because he couldn't, you know, when the food would get in, it would cause problems of swallowing, which I was aspiration or whatever you call it. But he says this idea that was because a lot of times people like the lumdus. So the lumdus of the Ramah is about hasara samoneya, but people often don't emphasize. But it was only in that scenario of gesisa. It's not just hasara samoneya's mutter that you could if you're doing something passively, like what it calls passive euthanasia. That's also not allowed. Okay, you want to say that maybe that's not called Ritzichet, but it's lo samol adam reyecha. But once he's in Gesisa, once he's in the state of Gesisa, so whichever way you say, like the Beis Yaakov or the Shavus Yaakov, once he's in the state of Gesisa, then things change. Even though it's an ironic thing, because Lemaisa, Goses is Kachai. A Goses is, you shoot a Goses, even though he has 10 hours left. You shoot him, Yechayv Misa. Because Lemaisa is still alive. But then he says, at any earlier stage, withholding of treatment is tantamount to euthanasia. What are the criteria indicative of the onset of death? So Ramah defines the state as being of the patient who brings up a secretion in his throat on account of the narrowing of his chest. Then he writes, of course, if the condition is reversible, there's an obligation to heal. When the condition of Gesisa is irreversible, there's no obligation to continue, like in if you read that article about Rabbi Ginsburg in the Mishpacha magazine, so it sounded that, you know, like everything was shutting down. It sounded like it was, but apparently, it was reversible. You know, so it was the virus. It was a virus, but once the virus, was no longer, so then the whole, it sounded like the way they was describing an article is everything was turning down, and he was mamish like a geisis, and it was all over. But Dr. Fine, you said that you've seen before in your medical.
Yes, each case is different. It's very hard to predict. Some things are obvious. If the patient has no blood pressure, no type of brain activity, I don't think there's anything to do for the drug. But a patient's just critically ill with all the organs failing, most of the time they die, but not all the time. I've seen people who I never expected to do them.
So in other words, everything was failing, and then what changed? What made it reversible?
If it's like from an infection or something like that, there's a higher chance to fight the infection, and they start healing themselves.
I can't hear you.
If it's like an infection, able to fight the infection, the body's able to...
Right, in other words, if they can fight the infection, then the body could get back. As opposed to what? So how are we ever going to know when a person is in the state of a gosis? In other words, how do we know whether it'll ever be reversible or not?
Yeah, as Mana said, I think it's going to be hard to say. Because in the time of the... If a patient couldn't eat, you couldn't do anything about it. They died. There's no way of keeping them alive. They couldn't eat for more than a few days.
Right. So he writes here, if the gesis is irreversible, there's no obligation to... But is there a more description? While a necessary criterion of gesis is certainly not a sufficient one, for the patient to present the symptom, but in the opinion of medical practitioners, should be capable of survival, he would clearly not be considered a gosis, and all usually obligations would remain in force. Moreover, the physiological criteria of gosis must be spelled out with care. It is surely clear that a patient whose life may be prolonged for weeks and even months is not yet more bound. The actual death process has not yet started to commence, and hence the patient is not a gosis. Right, so if he's going to be able to live for weeks and months, then he's not a gosis yet. That's what I asked Rabbi Blythe when my father was I was going to visit my father. You know, so there's a halacha that you're not allowed to touch a gosis, because if you touch a gosis, it prolong the it could prolong the it could hasten the death. So that's why I wanted to discuss with Rabbi Blyth about when he's considered a ghost. A nafkamina, if I wanted to kiss him or something like that, you know, would that be permissible? At that time, Corona was just about, you know, the first case in Washington, so he said maybe better not to kiss because of, because there was a case in Washington, before that it became rampant in New York. So I didn't, but that was the question of if you kiss a ghost, as you can move him, then that's, you could hasten the death, and that's considered ritzicha. So that's why it's very important, to have this discussion of what's a ghost is. So that's why I wanted to know. So he said, well, better not to do it anyway, because of the corona situation. The corona situation that was...
People hold the hands.
Right, people hold the hands. So that could be, you're saying that could be a problem. Right, people hold the hand, of a dying relative. So that could be a big shayla of an Nisar Ritzicha. If he indeed is a ghosis.
So how do you balance that with providing treatment if you don't know that the treatment's going to work, but could work, and moving the patient could be more harmful than the treatment that you're providing?
Right. You mean, so you're saying, so which one is it?
Which one takes precedence?
Right. In other words, well, if you're going to be able to save his life, right, that's the question.
Like a lot of treatments, like we obviously try our best and the patient still ends up dying, and like in the process, you probably sped things up because you were trying to save their life.
Right. So that's a very important point that you're making. In other words, what would be if you're trying to, but there you're trying to save it. You know, that's maybe would be the discussion we had. If you're giving up, you're doing something to give him Chai Olam at the expense of Chai Shah, or Chai Shah at the expense of Chai Shah. So those type of discussions that we had before. But that's a very important point that you're making. Trying to turn back.
Yeah, but equally, if how do we know to what extent a kiss or a hold of a hand doesn't prolong life? Who says that it has to shorten life? It might give a subliminal comfort to the person, and he holds on longer because of that, because he senses love.
He senses love, right.
Affection. Right. So, I mean, it's what COVID put aside. Now, forget about COVID, but talk about normal circumstances.
Right.
That gentle touch or kiss might actually prolong his life.
Right. But that's the question we had about if you could, in other words, you're giving him maybe Chai Shah, and at the expense of, well, it's not going to be Chai Olam here, it's going to be a question of Chai Shah from Chai Shah. It's an interesting point that you're making. But on the other hand, we do have this idea of not moving a ghost.
Is that holding a hand? Is that considered moving, or putting your lips on his forehead? Is that
I once discussed it with Rabbi Eddie Reichman about macro versus micro. You know, like what's called moving. You know. Is it something micro versus macro, in terms of that? So, it's a very hard, thing to quantify. But, okay, but that's the... Yeah. So then he writes here, Rabbi Blyth, on page 21. on the right bottom, it appears that any patient who may reasonably be deemed capable of potential survival for a period of 72 hours cannot be considered a Gosis. If the patient is capable of surviving this length of time, the death process cannot be deemed to have commenced. It would appear that halacha assumes axiomatically that the death process or the act of dying cannot be longer than 72 hours in duration. Right? So anything that more, you could assume that he's not a Gosis. This is evidenced by ruling that once one must commence to observe the laws of mourning 3 days after a relative has been observed in the state of Gesisa, right? That halacha, if the relative is already observed in the state of Gesisa, and then I guess he's not around to know what happened, he could already start, sitting Shiva. For some authorities even permit a wife to remarry in the absence of witnesses testifying to the actual death of a husband, provided the testimony is forthcoming to the effect that her husband was observed in a state of gesisa. I mean, these are for heter agunos cases.
As far as this, it's very hard to say that. There are people who linger on much longer than 72 hours. You always make it do this retroactively.
Right. In other words, how are we going to be so... Right. Gabi, to be matter laguna based on that is going to be hard.
Yeah.
But because we have all types of medicines and things like that.
Keep people alive much longer. In the process of dying, so...
Right. So therefore, Rabbi Bleich is making a point that and we're going to see where he writes that taking care of the relative, therefore, is still an obligation before we could really say for sure that the gesisa began. Take a look at the next page here, page 22. It appears that this state is not determined by a patient's ability to survive in this period solely by natural means, unaided by drugs or medication. In cases like Gosis, is one who cannot, under any circumstances, be maintained alive for a period of 72 hours. Well, you don't say, naturally he can't to be 72 hours, so therefore maybe he's a Gosis, but if we say that it's not a question of naturally, if could we, even through medication, if we could get him to be alive for more than 72 hours, then he's not a Gosis. Testimony with regard to the existence of a state of Gesisa as conclusive evidence of impending death implies that the state is not only irreversible, but also not prolongable even by artificial means. Otherwise, there would exist a legal suspicion that life may have been prolonged artificially by means of extraordinary medical treatment. The obvious conclusion to be drawn is that if a medically feasible to prolong life, the patient is indeed not a Gosis. And therefore, in such instances, there is a common obligation to preserve the life of the patient as long as possible. So that's the idea of what he's saying in terms of the Ramah.
Does that put medication in the same classification as, nourishment?
Right. That's putting medication in the same category of nourishment, right.
Okay.
Now look, this is what Dr. Rabbi Levy was asking about the other day, in terms of whether you follow what the medicine is of this generation, he says it follows that that a specific physiological condition may or may not correspond to a state of disease depending upon the state of medical knowledge of that day. When medical care is of no avail and the patient's manifesting the symptoms prescribed by Ma is expected to expire within 72 hours, he is deemed to be in the process of dying. When however medication can prolong life, such medicine is in fact delaying the onset of the death process. Accordingly, the patient who receives medical treatment enable him to survive for a period of 3 days or more is not yet in the process of dying. It follows, therefore, that those responsible for his care are not relieved of their duty to minister to his needs and to postpone the onset of death by means of medical treatment. In other words, he says, so as long as he's able to be kept alive more than 3 days, then he's not a ghost, and therefore all the chiyuvim of giving of everything to give him is still in mechuy achiyuv. Okay, so but Rabbi Bleich is very much against the point that he's keeping that it's totally on the medicine of the day, where science is holding in that particular moment in history that could change what there was. So what was a ghostes maybe years ago wouldn't necessarily be a ghostes today. It's, Asherhu Sham. And therefore, if he's not a ghostes, then all the chiyuvim to him apply. And that's the famous Gemara now he quotes in Ksubis. He says, the aggressiveness of which Judaism teaches that life must be preserved is not at all incompatible with the awareness that the human condition is such that there are circumstances which man would prefer death over life. Right, the Gemara in Ksubas on Kuf Dal and Amud Aleph says that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was afflicted by what appears to have been an incurable and debilitated intestinal disorder, and he had a female servant who was depicted in Rabbi Gray as a woman of exemplary piety and moral character. This woman is reported to have prayed for his death. And basically, and then the famous Ron, the Rav Nissen of Gerondi, in his commentary on the Nedarim states, based on that Gemara in Ksubas Kuvdal and Amud Aleph, that it's permissible and praiseworthy to pray for the death of a patient who is gravely ill and extreme pain. He charged those who are remiss in discharging the obligation of visiting the sick, remarking of such an individual, not only does he not aid the patient in living, but even the patient would derive benefit from death, even that small benefit, prayer of his demise, he does not bestow upon him. So therefore, he says, although man must persist in his effort to prolong life, he may nevertheless express human needs and concerns through the medium of prayer. So that's there's no contradiction, as we've said before. Then he quotes from Rav Chaim Falaji, an interesting thing here. There's one responsum here on the right side, on page 145, in particular, which deals with the question of prayer for termination of suffering through the death, which has important implications for decision-making in general. Rav Chaim Falaji accepts the view of Rabbeinu Nissim, that you can pray for somebody to die, but expresses an important caveat. According to this authority, only total disinterested parties may, by even so innocuous a method as prayer, take any action which may lead to a premature termination of life. But husband, children, family, and those charged with the care of the patient, according to the Falaji, may not pray for his death. Wow. He makes that Ron is only by somebody else. Your next door neighbor is suffering, so you could pray that he dies if that's his best interest. But he says, but a family member should never pray for the death. The consideration underlying these reservations are twofold in nature. They are emotionally involved. If they are permitted, even such non-physical methods of intervention as prayer may be prompted to perform an overt act on which have the effect of shortening life and thus be tantamount to an euthanasia. He says because of the... What he's saying is the people who are the making the physical decisions, if they're going to start davening that he should die, we're choshesh that maybe they'll make improper decisions physically. So therefore, we don't want them to be in that mindset. But the people who are not involved in the decision-making process, and they're good, well-meaning people, they can daven that he should die. And then he was number two, precisely because of their closeness to the situation, they are psychologically incapable of reaching a detached dispassionate objective decision in which considerations of patient benefit are the sole controlling motives. The human psyche is such that the intrusion of emotional involvement and subjective interest preclude a total objective and disinterested decision. So therefore, for those reasons, he feels, Rav Chaim Volozhiny says, that the Ran wouldn't apply to somebody who is a family member, or maybe somebody who's not a family member, but is somebody who's given the ability to make the decisions for the patient. Decisions that available therapeutic measures shall not be employed because they are hazardous or insufficiently demonstrated efficacy, or a decision that patient is really state of disease, are also subject to unconscious bias because of this inability of the family and physician to transcend their personal emotional involvement with the patient. Must therefore be stressed that Jewish scholars have long insisted that the pertinent facts be placed before a qualified rabbinic authority for adjudication on a case-by-case basis. In other words, he's afraid. What he's saying over here is that, you know, there's so many negias, you know, of when you're emotionally involved, and if you're the one that's making all the decisions, and you might have emotional involvement and things like that, might blur the proper halachic decision in these cases. So that's what he's saying. But there's another article that I also wanted to show you, but where he, as I told you, where he, this is probably another article that he wrote, maybe I put in another one, maybe not, about whether, you know, this distinction that people make between heroic methods and not heroic methods, that that some are of the opinion that heroic methods are not, you know, required. And Rabbi Bleich says that that's a part of the Christian doctrine. And so this is important. But that's the main point that he's hammering away, is that when we often look at that Ramah, we don't stress that idea that he's talking specifically about Kasisa, and that Kasisa could change from generation to generation. And because, again, you got to realize that Goses is considered a live person, and many times people are already making decisions about not feeding and not this way before the Gesisa period has begun. And that's what he's hammering away, Rabbi Bleich, that you know, should be not, you know, that could be then a question of, if you're not giving him food, that could be a shaila of gram ritzicha, and if you just stop not looking out for him in the proper way, that could be lo samad al dam reyacha. So that was the ideas that he discusses in this tshuva. And then there's some other articles here also about brain death and things like that. But the main point that I wanted to show you today is in that article of Rabbi Bleich on this matter. And Rabbi Bleich is a you know, person who's a big Talmid Chacham, and he knows science, a lot of people don't, you know, or Talmidei Chacham don't always know the metzius of science and things like that, and he's a person who's is well versed both in the halachic aspects and the science and things as well. Okay, so Bezer Shem, tomorrow we'll continue with the next Pachach of Dalid, and let me wish everyone a good day. Steve and Jaffe, good morning. Rabbi Alter, good morning. And Jacob Rocklin, good morning. And Dr. Rabbi Levy, good morning.
Good morning to Rabbi.
And Dr. Fine.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Nathan Bauer, good morning. And Rav Ezra Hagler, good morning. And Penny Rapp, good morning. And Rav Harari from Toronto.
Yes.
And Rabbi Feldman. Rabbi Ari Feldman, where are you, in Borough Park or in Long Beach?
No, I'm in Borough Park.
In Borough Park. Rabbi Feldman from Borough Park, whose father is also a very big physician in Borough Park. Rabbi Feldman's father is a very big physician in Borough Park as well. So, okay, so it's good to see you all. I wish you a good...
Rabbi Simon, I don't have 24. I got 23, I have 25, but I don't have 24. Who? Is there someone who can send us 24?
Yeah, who has 24? Does anyone here have 24?
I have 23, 25, 28. That's my order. That's, I'm missing in between.
What about you, Nathan? Do you have 24?
I could download it in the chat right now.
Could you send it on email?
You send it on email to Rabbi Levy?
Yeah. What's your email?
rlevy@flatbush.org. L-E-V-Y. rlevy@flatbush.
Just put it on the chat.
I don't know for sure if I have the chat.
So just email it to Rabbi Levy.
Okay.
Nathan?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll be well, and we'll see you, Bez Hashem, tomorrow. Bez Hashem.
Yes, Hashem.
Kol Tov.